for the most part tonight, Paul, we'll be talking about the future, all right?
Okay.
But before we get too deeply into that, into the program, there are a couple issues that have come up regarding the past that I'd like to clarify and sort of put to rest before we go further. Specifically, the last time you were on the air, you made a few comments during our first broadcast, just sort of off the cuff. We were just talking about your background, but you talked a little bit about the World Trade Center and their construction and your involvement and 9/11 and some comments that you had made regarding that stuff generated a considerable amount of anxiety among...
Why?
Well, I don't know. All I know is that I had a lot of people that would ask if I would clarify the business with you. It was a 10-minute segment out of a 3-hour interview, and I got a whole lot of people that were sort of up in arms about it. So for the record, I just want to sort of clarify that stuff for the people who want to get it clarified.
What specifically were they?
All right, specifically, knowledge of the WTC construction project and what you believe happened on 9/11. I want to start, let's just ask, first of all, again, your employment with Emery Roth.
Yeah. I was working for Frederick Kiesler at night.
An amazing architect, if people aren't familiar.
And he said, well, you know, like, you're kind of my apprentice, and I can't pay you much money, so you're going to have to get a day job to be able to live in New York. And so I hunted around, and I finally found this place that accepted me and brought me in and put me directly into the design group. Now, I was amazed because I went to, like, 16 other places and said, they asked me, you know, could I do working drawings, could I do this, that, the next thing. They said, no, you know. And so I figured I might not even get a job in architecture.
Right. All of a sudden, you're in the design group.
Yeah. And it's simply because that was the least desirable part of this company, because this company, in its heyday, was responsible for probably 80 or 90 of those file cabinet office buildings, you know, that are basically ripoffs of Mies van der Rohe buildings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what an architect would do, especially like a big-time designer, would come into New York and just take over the company. You know,
and again, this is Emery Roth and Sons we're talking about.
Emery Roth and Sons, yeah, right.
Hmm.
And they enjoyed this position because they were like a huge pencil for a prominent architect. And so here they said they were doing a joint venture with Yamasaki, and he had received the commission in 1958. There was a competition for the building, and he got it. And then, so by about 1962, they started working on it, but nothing was really going on. So I got there, like at the end of 1962, and so they put me on working for plans of floors 15 to 45 in Tower 2. Now that started to become a real problem because. That Yamasaki had never actually had any notion of the inside of the building. He didn't have a sense of the infrastructure. I didn't care because he had two offices. He came from Seattle. He was a Pacific Rim architect, but then for this job he went and got another office across from. The building in Chicago was the Sears Tower,
because
that was his major competition at the time. Because when it was finally built, it was about 200 feet taller than his building. But it hadn't been built at that point. So he was making sure that he would have his towers up and be the tallest buildings in the world for some time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so he wasn't interested in anything but the exterior envelope.
Right.
So when we discovered that one, people kept saying, well, what the hell is going on here? This guy's a loon. he He basically threw a job at this company,
uh-huh.
and not realizing that we didn't have the experience. That, in other words, the experience of the company was mainly doing working drawings and doing all the detailed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Given a plan, an interior and exterior design, so it was making the thing work.
Right. In this case, you basically just had the exterior design.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. When he brought in the model, it was the most beautiful model I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it was fabulously done. The only better models now are done with laser beams and a liquid, which produces a plastic model that can be like one thousandth scale. You know, so that you can. You could do the Taj Mahal with all its details and have the thing maybe 3 feet high or something like that.
Wow.
But at this time, the model was like 10 feet tall, so you could see the differences. And one of the differences is one was taller than the other because one represented David and the other represented Nelson Rockefeller. You know, the people that thought about it and then. Put in a lot of cash and got the whole thing going, you know. So it was a real glory job in terms of what they were doing, but he had no interest in the fact that you had to make all the streets work because you got the PATH train coming from New Jersey and a whole lot of interior things which messed up the appearance of the building. You know, at the bottom he just had a square. And you had these two long rectilinear solids that went up into the sky, and that was it. and so I started wondering when I was working on this thing how he was going to maintain the sense of office landscaping, because he sold the idea that this would be open space. And then you could move people around. You know, like today, people in offices do that. You know, they have focus group stuff and all
sure,
that kind of
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
This way, what it turned out, because it had three banks of 18 elevators, you literally went back to boiler rooms, you know, where you had rooms along the walls.
Mm-hmm.
You had a corridor, and then you had all the janitor's offices and the toilets and all that kind of stuff. In the center with all these elevator banks, and that was it. And so I started to think of ways to help it out, because you literally did not have enough space on a flat to run an office.
Hmm.
And so I said, how about if every fifth level we have a bridge across, and that's when I was fired from the company. For making that as a as an idea,
right.
Because everybody in the office thought it would be good, because first of all it would help the structure,
sure,
because you would have to weld the bridges into the four basic column cores in the center to make it work, and I think that it probably would have kept the building up four more or five more hours from what happened, and they could have gotten all those people out of there, because they could have moved around, you know, inside the structure instead of being, cut off from everything.
Mm.
But the thing was that as apparently, you know, because I heard from people that I remember in there, they said that later as they got moving towards finishing it, which was finished in 1972, that they started to cheat on stuff. They took out asbestos flocking, because that was when OSHA started to come into the picture and say that this, you know, that when you have a lot of asbestos, that this is going to give people asbestosis,
mm-hmm.
and you need that around steel. So that it won't melt, because that's literally what happened when these jets hit with all that jet fuel. Burning it at 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit in there, that started to melt the thing. And Also, I noticed in the structure that he didn't call for a lot of welding, mostly for rivets. Now, rivets are really dangerous in a big building because those things will collapse like a steel gate, which is another thing that happened. And then the thing that got me was while I was on the boards working on this thing, there were these engineers walking around who were from Saudi Arabia and asking me where can you put demolition devices. And I said, what the hell are you talking about? The thing is, this is on paper. There's nothing here. You know, we haven't done anything. Why are you worrying about taking it down?
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, that's the way people design their stuff now. Haven't you noticed? You know, you go away from New York for 6 months, you come back, and in the same spot there's another building. How could you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so when the things hit and went down, I said, my God, that was the point. I mean, that's why Building 7 went down. It wasn't hit. It was part of the electrical circuit to take the whole thing down. Of course, when they do that in New York, they cover the building with all kinds of tarpaulins, you know, right to the ground.
And they soak everything with water.
Yeah, just soak with water so that you don't have all the dust and all the stuff that happened. Like, you know.
Okay, a couple things. All right. Okay, first of all, Yamasaki's relationship to the Bin Laden gang.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, were they actually involved in the WTC project?
Yeah. Like, see, the thing is that they became his personal contractors, and he met them in Saudi Arabia because he made his name as a major architectural player.
Yeah, he had all kinds of projects over there.
Yeah, he did airplane hangars, right, railroad stations, schools,
mm-hmm.
hospitals,
big projects. Yeah,
you know, in anything that involved large large work. And so he brought them along because they were just doing junk jobs or something. And so he said, well, if you play along with me and do things exactly the way I want, then you and I can make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did because, like, I, every time that I've worked with a contractor, no matter what I do, what I draw, the guy will always figure out another way to do it, and then it's got to be torn up. And then he says, "Oh, is that what you meant?" You know, and so that he trained these people so that they knew exactly what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because detailing a building is tough to get the information across. I mean, it looks easy when you see the building up, but there's a whole set of assumptions about what's going on, and each architect tries to do something new, and so the minute you do something new and the person isn't an architect, they don't know what's going on.
Mm. Right. Okay, yeah. All right. Okay, so they're involved in the project. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so they're running around there. The idea of this idea of built-in obsolescence, people want to know details if you can provide any. In other words, is that what you believe happened, that charges were actually built in?
I think that that's the reason why that they attacked the buildings. This business of this was some kind of symbol of capitalism or something like that, this was a building that they knew,
mm-hmm.
because they were involved in building it.
Right.
And so they in 1993, they tried to do something at the lower floors with non-electronic devices or something or other, you know, so that the people wouldn't, like urine-soaked newspapers and all this kind of stuff. And then they blew out about six floors, but it really didn't do any damage because the four main columns, you know, that go right down through the whole building, were huge at the bottom. They were like elephant legs. You know, when you get closer to the top, they were smaller. So they were actually telescopic things that could fold up. That was another part of the structure.
Hmm.
So that you could, it's almost as if you could one day decide to to bring the thing flat right to the ground. And if done properly, you know, in other words, without the explosions, you know, just you know, when you put explosions in to demolish something, that doesn't mean that you demolish the whole thing. You just take the building down, and oftentimes you want to use some of the parts later. You know, and here the thing was almost turned into total dust.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, would they have had the charges built in, or would they have just have known where to put them?
They had to build them in.
Because that's what was going on all around New York, you say.
Yeah, because so that it's something that they don't tell people, because like if a secretary is working in some place and this place is loaded with explosives,
right.
You know, they're going to say, "What the hell? I'm not going to work in that place."
Right.
You know, so that the whole thing was basically very well protected, and
right.
It probably had like fail-safe electronic, stop gaps or something. You know, like the
right, right. And so the question of why they were triggered is still an open question. In other words, or who pulled the trigger, or if the trigger was pulled, or if it was just something that was triggered by the planes.
I think it was due to the planes.
Yeah,
the planes hit the electrical system that was involved in that.
What about number seven?
I would assume that all of them were connected, you know, to the whole system. Probably some other ones too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you mess around and you short circuit something,
yeah. Who knows? Mm-hmm.
And it just happened to do that to the building seven.
Yeah.
And so in other words, it was obviously a plot to do it. But they had a leg up,
right?
A leg up and a half, knowing that if you hit the right spot, you could take the whole thing down in a second, which is basically what they did.
Well, I'll be damned.
It came down very, very fast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, okay. I think that we have addressed this as much as we need to, and thank you very much.
Okay.
I want to say one more thing about it. First of all, for me, I really didn't have an agenda about 9/11. I have my own ideas, but as far as what I'm willing to share with anybody else, I think one thing, and that's that the official story is bunk. Other than that, I had no idea. And so this clarifies a lot of things for me.
I can remember when they had all these investigations and they had professors from MIT and talking about stuff and they were trying to stir up some conspiracy business, and I'm saying, why not ask the people who are actually involved in the design? I never heard anything about Emery Roth.
Right.
I never heard anything about Yamasaki.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Well, and this is why I got so much grief, and it's very interesting to me that nobody else is willing to touch this stuff. I mean, it really isn't. You can't believe what I've been through for the last 3 months about this damn thing.